hills wild, yes, when you're in a rage, you were swinging your guitar around, cause they wanted to hear that sound, but you didn't want to play. But you never wanted them that way. What a cruel price you thought that you had to pay. Them back for all that shit on stage. But it never made sense to them anyway. Could you imagine when they turned their backs? They were only scratching their.
And welcome to another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Stay with me.
Jean Deb said, to hell with war, to hell with all who crave it. When masters rule the world no more, we'll need no wars to save it. Why, the ones who own the tools, hoard the wealth, make the rules. The planet suffers for the powerful few. Gene Debs had a lot to say years ago, true today. With 2 million locked away, what can we do? There's a better world waiting. Work to win it. Put an end to poverty, to hunger, despair. While there is a lower class, I am in it. There's enough for everyone to have a fair share. While there is the lower class, I am in it. Where there is injustice, it is done to me. While there is a criminal element, I am of it. While there is a soul in prison, I am not free. Not behind the prison wall, but high above it. Truth and honor call upon us, rise and resist.
Rise and resist.
While there is a criminal element, I am of it. Crime will be unknown where peace and justice exist. While there is a lower class, I am in it.
And that's Ann Feeney for Eugene Debs from her album, Have You Been to Jail for Justice? This is Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse, and I'm a bit late. My apologies. not only kept you waiting, but I've kept my guest waiting, and we'll have him fairly soon. I've got some business to take care of, but we have a live musician just on the portals of the studio about to make his way in. Who knows when that's going to happen? Happens soon, probably. We played some of his stuff on Sunday, and you probably heard some of his stuff downtown. We're talking Eli Charleston, and Ragged Time is his most recent CD, at least the one I've got. We'll be talking with him in a bit. You may remember last show, or maybe just by reading the headlines of the Santa Cruz Urinal, or some call it the Sentinel, that there is a metro strike being threatened, and I'm hoping to get an update on that from United Transit Union worker, organizer, official, Bonnie Moore, who I spoke to earlier this afternoon, and hopefully I'll be calling her shortly. Then at 6:30, we're going to have an interview with Ford Green. Ford Green from San Anselmo is a guy who has been challenging the community, or actually kind of educating the community, and some people in the community don't like what he's doing. And what he's doing is he has a large sign in 16 parts, because the San Anselmo City Council has ruled that you can only have signs that are so big. So he has 16 little signs all put together. I'm looking at one of his signs now, 30 days until enforcement action to down the freedom sign. He's usually been using the sign to talk about issues like Bush's illegal war in Iraq that all of us are being subjected to. And it's interesting stuff. He's going to talk about his struggles to maintain his free speech rights and also what kind of impact that's having on the political climate up in Marin County, which is where San Anselmo is. That's going to be at 6:30. So lots of stuff happening, probably too much stuff as usual for me to keep tabs on all of it, and I apologize in advance for that, but I'm going to proceed anyway. And maybe what I should do is try to sneak in Eli. Eli, are you out there? You got that guitar with you? Now, I got to warn you, this is a sort of a makeshift setup here, particularly with me at the mic. Now, if you had some other programmer that actually know how to set up two mics to deal with your guitar, it would be better. We're going to get mostly you singing with some guitar as well, but it's not going to be your professional studio quality, but it's certainly better than, I don't know, I like the live aspect of it. Let me introduce you first before you start to play. Just who the heck are you, and is this mic working? Say something.
Hello.
Try it again.
Hello.
That's better. Get the mic closer to you if you can.
Actually, let me do this.
You could introduce yourself musically, or you can talk, whichever feels good.
Well, I'm Eli Charleston, the ragtime guitarist. I've been traveling around and paying homage to my gurus of ragtime guitar by doing street corners across America as the overall perspective. I'm only keeping in certain traditions of the past. However, we'll see how long it lasts, because a lot of places, including Santa Cruz, are going pretty much breaking down on street performance in many aspects of it.
How's Santa Cruz been treating you?
Santa Cruz has treated me very well. However, I'm aware of some of the changes in their ordinances and whatnot for downtown, however, I've not had any problems whatsoever.
Yeah, you've been playing actually with somewhat amplified music without a peep from the police department demanding a permit or the hosts. They've actually tolerated that, which I find remarkable and, you know, a very positive sign, except that I think it's probably a fluke rather than an indication of better times.
Of better times, yeah. I talked to both the police and the downtown hospitality crew about it, and we both understand that without that little amp that I hide, nobody would be able to hear my guitar over my voice, because I sing a lot louder than my guitar is. So
that makes sense. Of course,
I'm still not as loud as the sax players or the drummers out there anyway. So, you know, it's kind of just a necessary crutch for me. You know?
We won't require a permit for you on this amplified moment here. Of course, you're going to proceed. So Why don't you sing us a song? And I got to warn you, I'm gonna get Bonnie Moore on the line shortly to find out what's going on with the Metro strike. And then at 6:30, I have another interview coming up. But I hope you can hang and maybe do some playing. And I apologize for the scramble, but let's see what we can get.
No problem whatsoever. See what we can make it happen right now.
What?
Of course, is that on that CD that you got?
That
here?
Is not. That would be more of a medley that'll be on the Street Corner Rag CD. But I mean, I would gladly play something off of this CD.
I think the CD speaks for itself. I'd love to have the live view with new stuff. But you know, before you play more, because we've only got about 9 minutes until the next caller calls in. And you're welcome to hang tough and you know, hear what the caller has to say and make comments, maybe provide some quiet musical background, who knows. We talked a little bit, I believe, yesterday, and I may have that on tape. I may be playing that perhaps on Sunday, perhaps later today, about your kind of travels and your experiences on the street and how that went down, and which cities are most sympathetic to street performers, which you've liked the most. I think you singled out four cities that you particularly found congenial.
Santa Cruz is still up on the list, if not first. Some of the other ones on the West Coast, I did very well in Bend, Oregon, and it was another small town. I've done better in small towns. A lot of times the hustle and bustle isn't as prominent, so people have time to sit and listen to you for a little bit, and then you kind of have a more intimate situation, even with just street performance, and it's easier to sell CDs. But Bend, Oregon, I did very good. And on the East Coast, Asheville, North Carolina, and Burlington, Vermont were two cities that were very conducive to what I was doing on the street. I started doing street corner music when I was 18, and I did it for about two and a half years on the road, and then I took about 4 years off and did some things, did some college, and worked a couple different odd jobs, but to get this album out. But now this album is out, and I'm the ball's rolling again.
So you got a degree in the middle of all this?
I didn't have. I went for a while, but it didn't all work.
What kind of stuff did you study in school?
I went music merchandising.
Huh. Yeah, so you're an entrepreneur here. You're gonna make it. Actually, you know, you were telling me the day that you turned out this CD and invested a significant amount of money in it, and now you're making some of it back. But it's a slow process.
It's slow, but I mean, I'd realize that what I'm doing right now is small time. But it's still, to me, one of the most purest forms of entertainment as far as you just go out there and do it on the street. You're not asking people for anything. You know, they don't need to stop. They don't need to listen, you know, but they do. And, that's kind of, to me, one of the most rewarding things. And also, I know that all of the ragtime that was played in the past, in the mid-1930s, these guys all pretty much had lived poor lives and died poor. A lot of them started out doing it, and then they stopped for a while, and they had to get pulled back up, you know, 30 years later by a certain renaissance through the 60s. But a lot of these guys would go and sit on the street with a cup on their guitar, and that's what they did.
And you've been able, you told me that, you know, you can make it as far as usually your sales from your CDs, because you haven't been hassled, strangely, again, in Santa Cruz. Are you kicking down money to the police department? Wow, I'm still amazed at that.
Nope, I'm amazed, too. The cops actually have been really, really nice to me. I mean, what I'm doing is kind of...
Well, you're a very good performer. You're heightening the... You know, a lot of performers have been driven away by our downtown ordinances, which, in case the public that's listening doesn't know, and probably most of you do, criminalizes performing in most spots along the avenue. I mean, it criminalizes about 75% to 80% of the street. And although the police don't rigorously enforce it all the time, they kind of arbitrarily and capriciously not only enforce the law that's on the books, but laws that aren't on the books that they kind of make up because they don't understand the laws that are on the books, or they have their own sense of what's appropriate. So it's interesting. For example, in Atlanta on Monday, they passed an anti-panhandling law that essentially criminalizes panhandlers who are almost all black in Atlanta. And that's to deal with some new opening of an economic... some kind of thing like the Steinbeck Center in Salinas. They have their own new project opening up in Atlanta, and they thought that it would be unsightly to have these panhandlers panhandling around. First Amendment be damned. You know, we don't need their kind and so forth. And Santa Cruz, of course, is interesting, has an even more draconian anti-panhandling law than Atlanta. And Atlanta, there was a big hubbub. I mean, at least it was twice postponed by the city council. Eight members of the city council voted it in over three after a big to-do, a sleep-out, and so forth. And we actually had that similar experience in Santa Cruz both in 1994 and 2002. And a lot of it was led by street performers who were concerned that their traditional venues were being destroyed. For example, the Street Performers Guidelines, which I don't know if you saw them when they were around. When you were in Santa Cruz before, right?
4 years ago and 5 years ago.
So you were there when the actual Street Performers Guidelines were still in force, which are not guidelines mandated by the city, but devised by street performers themselves, Jan Luby,
like
Tom Noddy. Yeah. They were voluntary street performers code. You play for an hour, and if somebody doesn't like it, they have to wait at least another hour before you leave. And it's not a law. You can stay as long as you want. But, you know, it's a matter of courtesy. And there was not significant complaints about that, except for merchants who didn't like political tablers and homeless civil rights activists like some of the people that are in the studio today. So, you used to have a much freer situation here, but what's the situation in other cities compared to Santa Cruz? How are these other cities, the Santa Cruz? I mean, apparently you've been given a carte blanche yourself this time in Santa Cruz. I mean, have you been moved along at all, said don't play here, don't play there?
See, I've been moved. I got moved 2 feet once. Which is apparently I was just 2 feet too close to a walk, which I'm fine with. You know, I understand. I follow, you know, a code of sorts. I mean, even pirates have codes too. And just being around in certain cities, I know, you know, I stay out of earshot of somebody else. I stay out of people's way. I don't want to sit where the basic flow of foot traffic is going to be. I want to sit somewhere where people can come and sit and listen if they want to, but not like have to come right beside me. You know, plus it can get kind of loud at certain times when I'm singing. But I've been moved along just once. That was about a 2 foot move, and I was completely fine with it.
And you've been allowed to play in spite of the fact you play for more than an hour, right?
Yeah, if somebody's sitting and waiting to play, then it's fine. But you know, typically I only play for about an hour. I usually hour and a half is usually an hour and a half tops, and that's only like at the Tom Scribner statue, which they've outlined said that you can actually sit there for as long as you want.
Can you imagine the one spot in town where you're allowed to sit as long as you want? I mean, it's an amazing First Amendment grant of right at that particular place.
It was funny. I was talking to a fellow on the street who was an older fellow who's been here for a while, and he was talking to me about Tom and asked me if I knew him, and obviously I haven't. But he was saying that Tom would never play in front of the bookstore. He said that he'd get run out of the bookstore, in fact, and he'd go sit up at the top in the circle up there at the head of the Pacific Ave. And then after he died, they had a push to put the statue there. But I still do well there. Plus, with the flower shop right there, it's with the happy-go-lucky music that I'm playing, and it doesn't really have any kind of political orientation. And a lot of times, it's just trying to be pure, you know, joy. I think that's a lot.
Well, you've got a great voice and you got great lyrics. I'm concerned with obviously, you know, more in line with, you know, get the fuck out of Iraq and do something about the situation on the streets.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're more trying to blend in and sort of, you know, make your way in the midst of this weird scene. So you've been to many cities throughout the country. I guess you kept a low political profile, eh? Do you ever bust out with a "fuck the war" song? Does that ever happen?
Actually, one of the reasons that I picked ragtime as my street performance genre is because as a street performer, a lot of time I'm out there for 6 hours a day playing music for 6 hours a day, which is every day, you know, which is kind of, that can drain you pretty quickly.
Unlike Santa Cruz, you're playing only 1 hour a day
at a time, and then I'll move to another spot and play for another. But I usually do about 6 hours a day most of the time, and then I'll take a break every, you know, once a week maybe. But I've found that.
Let me interrupt you because unfortunately this call I mentioned from Ford Green is coming in. So hang tough for a bit and see what we got here. Hi, are you there?
Yeah.
Is this Ford Green, the notorious malcontent from San Anselmo?
That would be me.
Wow. Well, I'm in the studio with me is a more mellow guy. So you and I are going to have to, you know, spice him up. His name is Eli Charleston. He's a musician, and he's going to be listening to us go through the more political, and hope he doesn't get too impatient with us. Welcome to Free Radio, Ford.
Thank you. This is Robert, right?
It is.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm tuned to your website here. I should say I'm dialed tuned. I'm here on your website, which is www.fordgreen.com. And let me just make a few announcements now I've got you on the line for other folks listening. That's Ford's website. Ford is a man who's an attorney up in, although I don't really, I hate to describe you simply as an attorney since that's really a dirty word to me, but.
No, not necessarily, just mostly.
Okay, well, you obviously have some other virtues or I wouldn't be having you on the air. you're standing up for basic First Amendment rights, and you're also trying to inform the community about war criminal behavior on the part of the national administration, right?
That's true.
And also, you know, repressive behavior by local authorities, which really is my gig. I'm concerned about, you know, there's lots of talk in lefty magazines about how bad Bush is on Iraq and how bad the Democrats are, for that matter. But you don't hear much about the local scene, whether it's the San Anselmo City Council or, in my case, the Santa Cruz City Council. San Anselmo, for those who don't know, is a little town about, what, 15 miles north of, or is it 30 miles north of San Francisco?
It's about 20 miles north. And also, just one thing for the people that are interested, make sure you tell them, or I'll say
you
now,
tell them.
Green's got an E on the end of it. So it's Ford, GREENE.com.
Yeah, it's all one word, Ford Green in small letters, .com. And I'm looking at it now. I got some nice photos here of your 16-part sign. My goodness, a sign in 16 pieces. How do you put them all together? It's like a jigsaw puzzle, or?
I had the panels made by a sail maker, and they've got grommets in them and carabiners that hook the pieces together.
Well, go ahead.
The reason I constructed it that way was because. Almost two years ago, I obtained a federal court order invalidating half of San Anselmo's sign ordinance. The reason I felt compelled to go to federal court was because a friend of mine, who is a Green Party member, ran for town council in the adjacent town of Fairfax. And so we hung up an 80-square-foot political endorsement sign for Larry Bragman. And 2 days later, without a warrant, without notice, the cops came onto my property with a cherry picker and plucked it off my wall. And so that...
Where exactly is your property?
It's on Sir Francis Drake Boulevard, which is a major artery in Marin County. It's got two lanes going in each direction that feed into a big intersection called... known locally as the Hub, and the Hub processes approximately 66,000 cars a day. And my wall is, I think it's about 34 feet tall, so I can, and it directly faces traffic, and a lot of times traffic is stuck waiting for a red light, so there are people there whose lives, when they like my messages, are made much better because it makes being stuck in traffic less boring. And those who can't tolerate my message seem unable to look away and instead tend to go apoplectic.
Well, I'm looking at some of you on your FordGreen.com. And again, that's Green with three E's, actually.
Right.
There's a sort of a rotating sign. We're about to find out whether we have the politics of a banana republic is one. I'm kind of looking at one after another. Our Republic 1, the banana 0.
Here's so those were ratings on the debates.
Uh-huh.
The sign gets hoisted up and down
Here's one, vote the thugs out.
Yeah.
Here you have an American flag hanging upside down from your sign.
That was on Black Wednesday, the day after the election.
Well, I didn't burn it. Besides, flag upside down is an international signal of distress. It's another one of the signs. You apparently are carrying on a dialogue with the community and listening, or actually reading, some of the letters of people who've written into the Marin Independent Journal, which is your local rag.
Right.
Or newspaper, perhaps we want to call it. You've stirred up quite a hornet's nest. You want to give us kind of a... How long have you been doing this, first of all? How long has this questionable sign been up?
let's see. It's been up since the end of February 2004.
And your windows haven't been broken out, but you have suffered some kind of hostile reaction, right?
Yeah, I mean, my windows got paintballed by the Scientology organization when I hung up a sign... outing an attack that they had made on me. That was Wednesday the 4th, about a week of November, Was that? I can't remember
you,
what the.
You, as an attorney, you were kind of taken out after a Scientologist at one point, trying to what cult deprogramming? Is that what you were calling it? Or
well, I mean that's a different subject. I mean my law practice is really quite specialized in as much as I represent people who have been unwittingly brainwashed and dominated by religious cults and then exploited for money, sexual favors, free labor, and so on and so forth. And so Scientology is one of the cults that I have successfully litigated against, and so that's caused that organization no end of consternation. And so
both the Republicans and Scientologists are on your ass, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the Republicans and Scientologists want my scalp.
Interesting. I don't know how many Republicans are Scientologists. They're kind of, I mean, is there an overlap between the groups, or are they pretty much kind of disparate populations?
Oh, I don't know. I think they're probably disparate.
Yeah,
by and large.
I know. Well, I know that I briefed myself briefly on what's been happening to you recently, because you had a city council meeting at San Anselmo trying to defend your sign against a complaint by a conservative San Anselmo resident.
Well, actually, let me back up a little bit and kind of give you the context in the story. So the cops came, they pulled the 80-foot sign down with a cherry picker without a warrant, without any notice, when I wasn't here. And so that angered me sufficiently to motivate me to work all night long and be in federal court the next day, which happened to be Halloween, and file a civil rights lawsuit against the chief of police of the town of San Anselmo and seek a temporary restraining order keeping the cops off my property and keeping them from interfering with my free exercise rights.
And you actually have some photos of the cops taking photos of your sign posted on your FordGreen.com website.
Right? That's right. That's uh-huh. right. They love to take pictures of my sign. So the town defended with some erstwhile ordinance that had been hastily enacted less than 2 weeks before, saying that political signs could only be 6 square feet in size, and you could only have one sign pro or con per issue or candidate.
Well, that seems fair. After all, this First Amendment is kind of an antiquated thing, isn't it?
No. First Amendment's a living, breathing deal. I mean, not that our democracy is
in any way affected.
In any kind of way healthy. But in order for a democracy to be healthy, you've got to have the free flow of information, because democracy is predicated on the value of the individual and recognizing that each individual is basically has smarts and intelligence.
Let me ask you about San Anselmo, Ford. I lived there actually for 8 years. Back in the 80s.
Okay.
You know, so I know a little bit about it, but I mean, I don't know really that much about it. You can live in a town and not really know what's going down. What's the main industry? How many people? That sort of thing. Tell me a bit about San Anselmo.
God, those are good questions. I think there are about 14,000 people here. I would say probably the main industry is restaurants and antique stores.
An antique store. Doesn't sound like a very radical population there.
No. I mean, and the demographics have been changing over the last 30 years. I mean, I've grown up, I'm 52, and I've been in the valley that I live in almost all my life. And so, you know, in the 60s, San Anselmo and Marin was a pretty hip place. It's changed a lot as it's been discovered by the rest of the country. Property values have gone through the roof. And so the demographics from artists and musicians and creative people have really changed to be, by and large, rich white people who generally don't have a whole lot of soul, and that's really what that's what a lot of the population is now.
And you're one of them rich white people, right? Fairly well to do. You're an attorney, right?
Well, just because I'm a lawyer doesn't mean I'm rich. I mean, I'm grateful enough to actually own the building that I hang the signs on, but I never. That's just recent. I've just owned it in 3 years. Before that, You know, I rented like everybody else, and always, you know, lived with kind of a remote fear of ending up having to push a shopping cart.
Did San Anselmo vote for Bush or lookalike Kerry during the election?
No, it was Kerry.
So it was Kerry.
Yeah.
So you actually, the message you're putting out, even though most of the Democrats are too timid to call for the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq, by the way, have you called for that or not?
Explicitly on, I don't think I've hoisted a sign explicitly saying that. I think implicit, it's there with almost every sign that I hoist.
Well, I want to see a sign tomorrow that says, U.S., get the fuck out of Iraq, please.
Well.
Maybe I should put up my own sign. Actually, I have. That's another matter. Not as systematically as you have. We're talking with Ford Green of San Anselmo, attorney and sign maker, and also a man who isn't afraid to challenge the authority of, well, not the authority to, well, I don't know. Are you challenging the authority of the San Anselmo City Council, or are you simply following the process? Because I understand after they voted, I guess they voted on August 8th or 9th to essentially accept the idea that you can't have a sign.
Well, see, this is kind of the deal.
Tell us what happened.
As a result of my litigation in federal court against the town for violating my free speech rights, there was a mediated agreement. What the agreement was is that there'd be a stay of litigation. We wouldn't do any discovery. I wouldn't take any depositions. And I would go through the town's planning process in order to legitimate my sign. I mean, I didn't think it needed legitimization. I don't think that it does. But that was the idea. So I went through the planning process, and on June 20th, this summer, the Planning Commission voted to approve my request for a variance to have the sign. And so that variance approval brought out all of the far-right Republicans in the Ross Valley that couldn't tolerate the idea of my sign being a permanent fixture. And so this one guy who's a senior partner in a law firm called Latham and Watkins, which has got 1,600 lawyers in it in about 10 different countries.
These are the real rich white guys.
This guy's a seriously rich white guy. I'm just kind of medium. Appealed the Planning Commission's grant of the variance to me. And so it was what the town council knocked out was the Planning Commission's variance.
Well, this is a town that went for that great liberal Kerry. Of course, you hear the sarcasm in my voice, but nonetheless, he's viewed by some as being at least 2 inches to the left of Bush on some issues. Why would the Planning Commission take a unanimous stance in favor of granting you the variance, and the City Council voted unanimously against it? Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened. Although the Planning Commission, it was a 3-2 vote. And
so it wasn't. Okay.
It wasn't unanimous.
Narrow victory.
It was like I squeaked through, and the town council, that was a 4-0 condemnation.
And the Planning Commission is appointed by the town council?
God, is it? That's a good question. I don't know.
It is here in Santa Cruz, but I don't know what the story is up in San
Anselmo.
I
don't know the answer to that.
Huh. Well, you have been carrying on a very vigorous discussion on the Internet. Again, FordGreen.com is where people should go. Ford, FordGreene. By the way, folks, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM at www.freakradio.org. I'm talking with the very same Ford Green. And if you want to ask Ford any questions, if you want to attack him for his vicious left-wing views, or support him for talking a little sense to the San Anselmo community, you can give a call here to Free Radio, 831-427-3772. That's 427-FRSC. We actually have a second line in the studio, thanks to the diligence of our fine collective workers here. So what's the next step here? They denied you your variance, and you got some sort of compromise in play where you're... You can only put up a teeny tiny 6-foot sign.
No. I'm not. See, one of the problems is here, there's all this latitude that's given to commercial speech. So there are ugly-ass commercial speech signs all over the place. And my point is, with all these ugly commercial speech signs that are festooning all of these shops and stores. What's the big deal about my sign? Why is my sign getting singled out? Well, it's obvious because it's political speech that a small chunk of the community doesn't like. And so what I've proven able to do, and what I'll do if I'm pushed far enough some more, is go back to federal court and seek more injunctive relief. So the town doesn't want me to do that. And so we're talking, and the idea, they want me to cut my sign down by half. I'm not going to cut it down that far.
How big is it?
It's 96 square feet.
So 96 square feet is about 10 by 10, something like that?
It's 8 by 12, I think. I think it's 8 by 12.
Which isn't that, I mean, you know, we're not talking Las Vegas big.
It's big enough to see. It's definitely the biggest sign around here, with the exception of the local movie theater that's dead, that has various advertisements up on its marquee, and that's less than a quarter mile away. It's not any bigger than the nursery sign that's just a little bit further away than that. So they're double standards, and the double standards are really obvious. And we'll see what happens.
Huh. What about the media? I see you've got some... If people go to your website, they can see both letters from the Marin Independent Journal, news stories, Ross Valley Reporter, Pacific Sun. Are you getting support from the media or opposition?
No, by and large, I think the media has been very supportive of my sign. And I think the controversy sells newspapers, and that's one of the reasons why they like it. But also the local paper here in Marin, the Independent Journal, the Daily, has come out with editorials saying that the controversies that my sign has generated is free speech at work. There's been a cartoon on the editorial page making fun of San Anselmo's restrictive political sign ordinance. So I would say that by and large I've been treated quite well by the media around here.
Well, I'm looking at some of the signs. Bush hates freedom, gives Heil Burton our candy jar. What's this about?
That one's about that Bush hates freedom is
self-evident,
obvious.
Yes.
Okay, that's and Heil Burton is a play on words for Halliburton.
I see.
And our candy jar, well, that's pretty obvious too. Our candy jar is where all of our quarters and nickels and dimes in terms of tax dollars are placed.
For, I think it was 200 or 300 billion so far over in Iraq.
Oh, it's outrageous. I mean, see, this is one of the things that's so offensive, is that it's our tax dollars going to enrich corporations that that Cheney used to run. I mean, that to me is so patently offensive. So the American population, we're just like cows that get milked twice a day, except for us, the billing cycle is about two times a month.
Well, here you have another one. Expose psychopolitics, lies, demand a competent press, tell Europe no Hitler here, burn the Bush house, speak up and vote. Now, you're not suggesting arsonists assault our poor Führer, are you?
No, not at all. If you look at the coloring of the letters, you'll see that expose lies are in red, and burn the Bush house is in red. And burn the Bush house is in colloquial terms like burning a snitch, and George Bush is really a snitch to the values that underlie the First Amendment and the U.S. Constitution. So burn the Bush house really means burn the snitch. And when you burn a snitch, what do? You expose them.
By burn, you're talking about, you know, you're using the word colloquially rather than put a tire around him and light it on fire.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about necklacing him.
Right.
No.
Well, you know, Santa Cruz has finally kind of joined Arcata somewhat in urging the U.S. to get out of Iraq.
Uh-huh.
It took them 2 years to do it, although Arcata did it somewhat sooner. Has San Anselmo done anything similar as a city council?
The only similar thing they did was to adopt a resolution condemning the Patriot Act, and that was in large part due to public pressure. The only other time that so many people converged on the town council, there are a lot of people that converged on the town council to put pressure on them to adopt the resolution against the Patriot Act. And a similar number came down to communicate to the council to leave my sign alone. The Patriot Act condemnation fared better than mine.
So in spite of the 4-0 majority against you on, was it August 8th?
9th, I think.
August 9th. You point out in your analysis on your website that almost 80% of the people spoke in favor of you in a 2.5-hour period?
Yes. That's right.
So you either have imported a lot of renta mobs from Berkeley, as the right-wingers on KGO like to say, or you got some people who are local supporters, who at least supporters of the First Amendment. Huh?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There are a lot of people. One of the values of my sign, okay, we live in a culture that is awash in propaganda. And the propaganda is increasingly severe, and it's a type of propaganda, as you know, that will suggest that to even criticize the Bush administration, not to mention full-blown dissent, is the functional equivalent of engaging in sedition or traitorous act.
In fact, I'm looking at a letter from Michelle
Schelfer
to the IJ, date from July. And you got some quotes from it. If the Drake Boulevard ranter cared about our troops, he would not contribute to a climate that leads to more death. Far from proclaiming his free speech rights, perhaps the ranter should be tried for treason, for aiding and abetting the enemy in time of war. Have you turned yourself in yet to the government for your treason trial?
obviously, no. But that's kind of, there's a lot of crap like that out there. And there are a lot of people that whose guts and whose instincts and whose intelligence tells them that something is way wrong, but in a climate and atmosphere of fear that involves threatening kind of things like Michelle Schelfer articulated, they're isolated. And so part of what my sign does is say, hey guys, you know, you're not alone. I'm not alone. There's a lot of people that think that this war and this administration and these corporate favoring policies are a bunch of garbage, and it helps. You know, it's like a voice in the wilderness that was once the United States.
According to Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! This morning, I think it's either 150 or 1,500. I don't know which. Solidarity demonstrations happened last night across the country in favor of Camp Casey's Cindy Sheehan, the woman who... Are you there? Hang on a second here. Can you hear me?
Something's wrong with the phone.
Yeah, getting a little blurred out there. She's the woman, of course, who's camped outside Crawford, Texas.
Right, the woman from Vacaville.
Exactly. Wow, that's... I guess I knew that, but I really wasn't as aware of it as I could be. Any response up in San Anselmo and San Rafael, which is a county seat nearby, and I take it a larger community than San Anselmo, up in Marin?
There was in San Anselmo. There was a candlelight vigil in front of the town hall.
And is that, are these kind of these are one-shot deals, or do you see these things growing?
You know, Cindy Sheehan seems to, it doesn't seem like it's a one-shot deal. It seems to have struck Accord. So who knows? It sure needs to happen, whatever it takes, whether it's Cindy Sheehan or something else. I mean, my God, when the elections happened in the Ukraine and they were fraudulent, I mean, people were in the streets, camped out until it got fixed. I mean, people in America, you know, they eat dinner and they go to bed. And so it's like a democracy is like a muscle. If you don't use it, it atrophies.
Well, the Democrats, too, even the people who had the election stolen from them. And
oh, yeah, well, they're the worst ones.
Yeah.
Kerry was the worst ones. I mean, Kerry was a complete wimp. I mean, just like Gore. He threw it after promising not to, after promising to fight, he didn't. He threw in the towel. I mean, it seems to be a consistent M.O. that Democrats have, that when they get ripped off, when they get their asses unjustly kicked, they just go home. They don't fight back. There appears to be some sort of belief that to fight back or to put Richard Nixon in jail, for example, would be divisive to the country, and it's something that we shouldn't do.
Well, you don't want to rock the boat too much because, I mean, in the Vietnam War, the Democrats were instrumental in, you know, beginning that illegal war initially.
That's true.
And they, of course, have colluded with the Republicans in proceeding with this war as well. So
that's true.
It's these, you know, this small elite at the top. You call them Democrats, call them Republicans. They are all, you know, similar incomes, you know, similar points of view and similar gutlessness is the way I see it.
Well, it's not only that, but it's also similar stake and similar risk of loss.
Right.
And, you know, you're right. I mean, they've got they're imbued with power, they're imbued with millions of dollars, and the risk of losing that is apparently too great, which just, it stinks for the rest of us.
We're talking with Ford Greene up in San Anselmo. In case you want to talk to him or to me, or you got some other opinions on the subject that we are discussing, 427-3772 is the call-in number. 427-3772. You can talk to both of us. Well, let me ask you, let me shift the subject matter a little bit, Ford. First of all, how much time have you got?
I've got another half an hour or so.
Okay, we. I don't know if we can take all that, but maybe 5 or 10 more minutes.
Oh, 5 or 10 is fine. I'm starving, man. I want to eat dinner.
Definitely,
I'm trying to be accommodating.
Well, let's get on a little bit of that. Then, one of my concerns here in Santa Cruz is the way poor people and homeless people are treated by authorities like the police.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you're into decultifying folks and that sort of thing, and you know, asserting people's rights against powerful organizations like Scientology. But what about local powerful organizations like the police department, discrimination against poor people up there? Have you been involved in anything with respect to that, or do you have any report on what's going on up there around that?
No, I haven't been involved in representing poor people that have been hammered on by the police.
And does that happen much? Have you seen much of it, or is it, I mean, do you, for example, have people on the street who are poor, who are panhandling, or is that...
We're really too white here in San Anselmo.
Too white because everyone gets fed or everyone gets driven off the streets who doesn't want to, you know, who doesn't fit the mold.
For years we've had like one homeless guy, and he like disappeared a couple years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Send out a posse. Huh?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he was. Was mentally ill and just basically lived on the streets. The word was that he lost.
So you have no housing problem up in San Anselmo?
Oh, we got a housing problem. It's just, I think all the poor people really are all shunted over are shunted into San Rafael and to Marin City.
Right.
You know, the Latinos are shunted into San Rafael and the black people are shunted into Marin City.
What about Fairfax, that hippie haven?
Fairfax is, you know, it is a hippie haven, thank God.
Got any free radio stations up there? Any pirate broadcasters?
No, we need them.
Well, it's time for you to start a station there, Ford.
It probably is. I'm going to have to, like, pick your brain and get some pointers because it's been a thought of mine for a long time.
Well, yeah. Down here, of course, and I think in a couple of the cities like San Francisco and Berkeley, bunches of people came together and did it as a group, and
mm-hmm.
I guess the individuals can do it too. Although I think individuals are easier to pick off by the federal government than groups, so they go after groups too. It's true.
Well, no, I mean solidarity is completely critical. I mean, one person can make a lot of difference, but ultimately, without a bunch of other people acting in solidarity, it's not enough. It's not enough. I mean, you look at the great leaders in history. You look at the Gandhis. You look at Martin Luther King. You look at various leaders. And it wasn't a solo act. They were the leaders, but they had a ton of people that were very bright and very capable who were supporting and believed in their agenda and went helping further it.
We got a caller, Ford.
Why? All right.
Hey, you're on Free Radio with Ford and Robert.
Yeah, I was just listening to him and his desire to... Excuse me, I just tuned in right now, so I'm not really too familiar with what you guys are talking about. But heard him mention he was interested in starting a pirate radio station. I just want to let him and all your listeners know that Free Radio Berkeley is sponsoring Build Your Own Transmitter Workshops.
Wow.
So that people that are interested in micro radio broadcasting and perhaps starting a station themselves, September 2nd through September 5th, that's Labor Day weekend, it's a four-day intensive course where you actually will build and test and your own transmitter. And then there's an option to buy it as well. So you can actually go build your own transmitter and then buy it from the people that provided you with all the parts for the transmitter. So I just want to let you know, you can check out freeradio.org, I think it is, for more information. I happen to know via a little friend of mine that there's a PSA in the PSA book all about it. So, Robert, if you want to check that out and let people know it a little more, there's some information in the PSA book there.
Do you know much about the costs of starting a station, since Ford here might have to, you know, get together with some of his confreres? How much does it cost?
Well, this workshop, they're offering to sell you kits. You know, you pay for the tuition of the workshop, you know, their time and all the materials. And then you can buy the transmitter that you build for, I believe, anywhere, depending on how powerful it is, of course, because the more powerful the transmitter, the more expensive it is. But you can buy a transmitter for $200 to $500 if you enroll in the course and take it.
I'm actually looking at the announcement, and it says a 4 days hands-on workshop, and it tuition is $150 to $200. Sliding scale transmitter kits are provided and can be purchased. And the average cost for a broadcast station kit, transmitter, antenna, cabling, power, and supplies $300 to $700, depending on the kits and the power level chosen. And again, it's, as you say, www.freeradio.org. That's free radio is one word, small letters.
You know, that's kind of obviously the most essential elements of a radio station would be the transmitter, antenna, power source, anything like that needed to actually broadcast your signal. Once you have that equipment, really, I mean, you could do it with like a mixing board, an iPod, and a microphone. You know, you don't even need all the fancy doodads that we're blessed to have at Free Radio Santa Cruz. You could set up, you know, a really simple station.
Well, maybe like Eli here could have a guitar station as he moves across the country. By the way, I want to introduce you, Ford, and caller to Eli. Eli, say hello to the gang here.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Eli.
So,
what's up, Eli?
This is coming up September 2nd through 5th, right, caller?
That is correct.
Attorneys have always been, not all of them, but many of them, and you could be an exception to this, Ford, reluctant to get into free radio because of the fact that it is illegal, and that might put you in a difficult position, particularly since you are already a controversial figure. So here you have an opportunity to blacken your reputation further publicly, Ford. Hey, anything else, caller?
No, I'm going to cut out. I just wanted to definitely pass that information on, though.
Okay.
So, thank you, Rod, for all your work.
Hey, thank you. So what do you think, Ford? Is there any interest up there in any people starting a free radio station? Or
I bet there probably is. I don't know. But I think probably there is.
Well, you keep us advised. Maybe you should put up a, you know, San Anselmo needs a free radio could be your next,
Well, no, I could put the call letters up on my sign.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you actually would you'd find your own, the call letters for Free Radio Santa Cruz. Actually, I guess your nearest free radio is, well, you can't, I don't think you can get a free radio station up there unless there are stations I don't know about, but I haven't heard of one in that area. Berkeley, San Francisco.
There's some kind of station in West Marin, but I don't know that it's a pirate radio.
You got any free food stuff going down there in San Anselmo that is getting any kind of pressure from the police?
Free food?
Yeah, and there's been attacks on food servers in some of the major cities by attacks. I mean attempts to legislate them out of existence.
Oh. It's not an issue here. Too white, too rich.
Boy, that's becoming a constant refrain.
Well, you know, I got to tell it like it is.
Yeah. As you do, we're talking with Ford Green, who has a 96-square-foot sign up on his building, or at least he did until...
Oh, I still do.
You still do. What does your sign say?
Right now, it's a little dated. It says, I think it says 30 days until... enforcement action to down the freedom sign.
Wait, and that's when is enforcement action actually due?
Well, it got bumped. Now it's October 11th.
So you got you should actually change the number on that sign.
I need to change the number. It was 30 days from August 9th, and so that sign went up on the 10th. I mean, it's time consuming. It's not a quick deal to change the sign.
These are letters like you find in a movie marquee, right?
They're acrylic letters where I've glued Velcro on the back of them.
Uh huh.
And then each of the panels has one inch strips of Velcro going across the front, and so I stick the acrylic letters on the Velcro strips, and that's how I change them.
How can people help you? Is there any appeal coming up, or is this pretty much you dickering with the city council on your lonesome? And you want people to write
the
council?
What they can do is they can go to my website and I think there are links up there to write the city council and to send me a copy. And just keep those letters coming in, and then as I get new people, I add them to my mailing list, and then at some point when I need to, then I can contact them. I think the networking and the support's really valuable.
Well, Fort, I really appreciate your coming on and giving us the straight dope, as you are apparently doing to a lot of straight dopes up there in San Anselmo. And I want to know what happens. I mean, I guess I can find out by checking at your website periodically, but feel free to call in if you've got an update at some point. Probably this long, but, it'll be brief and it'll be good, and you'll keep us advised. And, plus anti-war activity. I'm always interested in knowing what's happening up there in my old stomping ground.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being on the air. We're talking with Ford Green. Again, if you want more information, go to Ford Green, FordGreene.com. Here's a man with a sign big enough for the community to see, and hopefully it'll remain that way.
Hopefully it will. And Robert, thank you for the opportunity.
Hey, thank you, man.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. We have an unemployed musician here who's drinking up all the tea in the studio, and he's actually picking up his guitar again threateningly, so I'm going to let him take over while I take care of some bodily functions.
I don't know who broke the latch on my front door. Gonna find out before I go. Who broke the latch on my front door? I'm gonna find before I go. Who broke the latch on my door? Oh, baby. Who broke the latch on my door? King, hop in his back out from shaking that thing. Old Aunt Donna, she's a long and tall. She can shake like a cannonball. I'm gonna find before I go. Who broke the latch on my door? Oh, baby. Who broke the latch on my door? Oh, Chicago. Big lies, ashes to ashes and dust to dust, and old so and so don't hurt my fuss. I'm gonna find before I move who broke the latch on my door. Whoa, baby, who broke the latch on my door?
And that is on your CD, I believe. I think I played it on Sunday.
That is on the CD. We do it double time on the CD with drums and tuba.
Huh.
But, yeah, that's the original, more closer to the original way it was played. It was about 1933, written by a guy named Bo Carter.
Wow. What's your next stop after you take off from Santa Cruz? Are you planning to stay for a while?
Well, let's see. I'm gonna go through Frisco just for a moment, probably a day or so, and do Haight-Ashbury, and then I'm going to go do Old Sacktown this weekend, I think Saturday night or Sunday.
Where can people hear you on the street? Are you usually at a particular... I know you're a Roman man with our move-along law, but...
Well, in Santa Cruz, often I'm at Scribner, at Tom, the statue...
Bookshop Santa Cruz, that's one of the...
At the bookshop, yeah. Or in front of the New Leaf at night, in front of the alfresco stand. I sit there after...
Did you play with those raggedy band of singers, the Safe Singers, the other night?
Sometimes I go in and hang out and maybe sing along a little bit, but I don't...
I hope you don't associate with the lower classes like that. I mean, they really... I mean, come on. A man of your quality.
I love them. I love them, what they're doing. And you know, sometimes I'll pick up a shaker or something, but most of the time I've done some backup singing, but most of the time I'm usually either playing in my own spot or I just come through and hang out.
Yeah, for those who don't know, SAFE, the Society of Artistic Freedom and Expression, also known as... Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, who actually have kind of liberated that space in front of New Leaf. They actually totally confused the police, so now police are driving people out of the teeny tiny legal zone, which is 10 feet from a kiosk, 10 feet from the restaurant area, 10 feet from this. It's essentially a little 2x2 foot area. We've taken back the area, and the police have not attempted to move or charge us, which is good, because... That's how it has been traditionally. The problem, of course, is that only works when you have a lot of people there who are willing to stand up for their rights. And with musicians, it's hard because, you know, police can confiscate your instrument as an implement of the crime. You know, you don't want that to happen. So why not just move along, just as, you know, you may lose a right here and there, or place, but you can always kind of go along with the crowd. And for a lot of people, you have to do that if you're, you know, if you're on the road, you know, that's kind of how it feels. But for those of us who are cranky and sitting in one spot and don't mind occasionally going to jail or don't like it, but realize it's sometimes part of the deal, I say, let's take back Pacific Avenue so that it's available for everybody and not just for the merchants. And that... Even though you, I think, are fortunate in having a situation, because you are such a strong, well-modulated, I don't want to say mainstreamy, but, you know, you're not singing, fuck you, or, you know, you're not attacking our great Mayor Rotkin in your song. So,
no. So
you know, you're not terribly controversial in that regard. So, I mean, you know, I mean, that's good. I'm glad we have that. But I want to make sure that there's space for the rest of us. And unfortunately, at the present time, I don't see that being the case. So I'm going to keep talking about it. I actually have a bunch of stuff here. One is looking at last Sunday's Sentinel. If you can read my editorial. I actually got an editorial printed in the Sentinel about my arrest, which happened on June 14th for quote disrupting a council meeting, which means I stood at the mic and said, everybody else got to speak for 2 minutes. I also want to speak for 2 minutes on the issue of the unions across the street. Now they're being fucked over in the Civic Auditorium dispute with the IATSE is the name of the union. And I was arrested, hauled off in handcuffs, and now face a year and a half in jail, which I write about. Because it's not just me, which, of course, concerns me, because I sure as hell don't want to spend a year and a half in jail. But it's also about the city council's tendency to try to shut down discussion of subjects it doesn't want talked about, or to shut down conversational space for people it doesn't want to hear from. And that's what I found at the city council, and that's what the Brown Act is all about, the law that makes it a requirement that the public has certain rights at public meetings. Some people say, why bother? The public meetings aren't going anywhere anyway because the city council has made up its mind, which is usually the case, I think, or often the case. But the fact of the matter is, in theory, we should have a democratic situation, and the only way to even nudge toward that is to try to fight the erosion of those rights. And that's what I try to do with city council. Downtown, however, the Sentinel is publicizing those who are enforcing another side of the situation. They've got a long front page article called Walking a Fine Line. Downtown patrols face a tough balancing act, fight crime, preserve city's unique character. And got pictures of cops walking on the avenue, Pacific Avenue, including Officer Elizabeth Butler, who's our kind of new petite blonde female officer. I've actually talked about Elizabeth on the air. Everybody's different. We all got different encounters with different police officers. I remember trying to get some information out of her and her giving me the stonewall. I'm not quite sure why she did that, except that there's sort of this natural police tendency not to. They want information from you, but when you ask them questions that, such as you might ask someone who's trying to get information from you, you'll get, I don't want to talk to you about that. Oh, that's privileged information. I want to protect other people's rights. Blah, blah, blah. Often, for example, if you ask what someone is being arrested for, even if they want to know what they're being arrested for, the police will say, oh, we don't want to violate his rights by telling you what he or she is being arrested for. And that, of course, is simple horseshit. We have a caller here. I think we have a caller. We do. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Eli and Robert.
Yes, Robert. I am Uncle Dennis's fan from Los Angeles.
Oh, no.
I am just beginning. I'm preparing for my groovy trip back to the 60s, but I have a concern with what you said about your centennial or sentinel? Sentinel article.
The centennial, we like to call
it. Okay. You said there was an editorial about you. Did you write it?
Yes, actually, it's not an editorial. I misspoke
myself.
That is it. It's an
You are a learned man, so you should not make that mistake.
Yes, I am. I you're right. I don't know what I'm thinking. Obviously, I'm becoming a senile learned man.
That is a signed column of commentary or an op-ed.
It is an op-ed piece, and it's actually in the Inside section of the Sentinel on Sunday, which is you can pick up at the library, and it's also online on Indie Media if you want to go to the Indie Media website.
To Indie Media. Well, thank you so much.
Sure, and thank you. Are you from Los Angeles? Are you kidding?
I am from Los Angeles.
Wow. Are you calling in from Los Angeles?
I am calling from. We now have telephones here.
Amazing. I don't want you to enrich the phone company. We know where that leads.
Well, yes, sir. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, here you are in the studio with your guitar. Do you have any songs about wretchedness, poverty, injustice, anything of that sort? I know it's a down subject. It's a bummer, man.
To tell you the truth, like I was saying about why I chose Ragtime, aside from playing it all the time, and I realized that when a lot of these songs were being written in the 30s, in the early 30s, during the Depression, they were starting to write these kind of happy-go-lucky songs. I mean, they wrote them in the 20s, too, and they wrote them from, you know, Ragtime was first coined in about 1893. But in the 30s, when these guitar players were out there doing these rags, especially Blind Blake, they were singing these happy songs, but they were living these horrid lives. And they were very poor, and the world was in utter chaos, and yet they were trying to make themselves happier through happy music, which is one train of thought. Then there's the other train of thought where if you're not feeling happy, you sing the blues, and the blues can get you out of that.
Sometimes you sing the rage.
You sing the rage song. Yeah. However, I've found with what I'm doing at this present moment has been trying to inflict happiness in times of chaos, because I mean, we can feel that we're going into another depression era, maybe a second depression. Also,
how can you say that when gas prices are so cheap?
Yeah, that's another great thing when you're living in a van and driving around.
That's what you do. Your van is.
I'm a conversion van.
Are you
camper.
Sleeping illegally, by the way, every night?
I'm constantly on the move every night.
I see. But, so you maybe try to be legal downtown, but you are illegal at night.
That's right. That's right. And
more payoffs to the cops, I suppose.
Yeah, but I do have some of the songs on the album. One of the songs on the album that I wrote, so there's a couple originals and intermingled with songs from as far back as 1898 through the 1930s. And one of the songs on there that I wrote was called "Why Don't You Tell Me What You Want to Say." It's kind of a homage to people living in the moment and speaking their mind freely, which I think might be a little bit relevant. However, it's not filled with rage. It is merely a...
Do you have any relevant songs that aren't on this CD? Because I'm going to be playing these songs in the future. You have a very good voice. I like what you sing, but I'm not going to always have you in the studio. So maybe I can get you to whip up something that might be a one of a kind for this show. Perhaps not. I don't know.
I would need a minute if I was going to whip something.
Why don't you take a minute while I rage on about this article in the Sentinel? I'm looking over this article for those of you, again, you can go online on the Sentinel and look it over. It's by our old friend Shanna Banana McCord. she is a Sentinel writer. Her name isn't really Banana, but that's how I remember how it's Shanna and not Shana. It's a very, very sympathetic look at the police. And it also takes some sort of almost unconscious swipes at poor people. For example, she says, nearly every day that's Elizabeth Butler, the police officer, confronts homeless people downtown, confronts homeless people, shoplifters, drunks, people fighting, drug deals, panhandling, vandalism, and tourists asking how to get to the beach or wondering how to get the best who has the best burger in town. I suppose you might say, I find it kind of offensive that we have homeless people juxtaposed with shoplifters, drunks, people fighting, drug deals, panhandling, and vandalism. But I guess the inclusion of tourists engaging in innocuous behavior might be considered to be, neutralize somewhat the negative stereotype. There is a little section which talks about the laws of Pacific Avenue. Dogs are not allowed, panhandling is not allowed, or is allowed, but not in front of a store, not within 50 feet of a cash machine, and not at night. Actually, that's only part of it. You can't panhandle from a seated position. You can't panhandle in a group of three. You can't panhandle with a sign that can be seen by a person in a passing automobile, because that is a communication with that person. There's a whole bunch of stuff that Mike Rodkin doesn't tell you about. He will tell you that it's not enforced that way. It just reads that way, according to the law. So the police can enforce it if they want, but they just choose not to. And we, of course, have to trust our police officers to make wise choices. Also, other laws, there's a sort of a little listing of the laws. You're lying on the sidewalk is not allowed. Sitting on the sidewalk is allowed, but not within 14 feet of a building or window. What she doesn't tell you is that rules out about 95% of the sidewalk, and on all non-Pacific Avenue sidewalks, that rules out the entire sidewalk in every commercial district, everywhere in town. So you're not allowed to sit on the sidewalk except on Pacific Avenue and only on 5% of the sidewalk. And if you try to set up a political table, or if you're a musician with a cup in front of you, you have to be at least 10 feet from a building, and that would rule out doing it on any sidewalk except Pacific Avenue, and that would rule out everything but 75% of the Pacific Avenue sidewalk, which is within the forbidden zone there. So you don't really get a full picture of what is excluded and actually at whose behest. It's merchants that are doing this. But they do talk about, Shanna, I remember that, talks about this. In all, 285 businesses make up the downtown, which is the city's second largest sales tax base. The first, according to her, being the East Side, because it's brings in $2 million a year as a result of car dealers. There's numerous problems with the article. The main problem is a lack of real sense that there's any kind of repressive side to what's going on in Santa Cruz. There's no awareness of this writer of that. There's no awareness, for example, that there's a law that makes it illegal for 98% of the population to sleep anywhere legally. That 98% of the homeless population, and there are 1,500 to 2,000 of them out there in the city, every night. It's also illegal to cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night. In a city which has place for only 40 people of those 1,500 to 2,000 in its emergency shelter program, that, of course, is not just criminal neglect. It is a criminal sanction. It's kind of a pogrom against a class of people. It gives the police a blank check to search, harass, interrogate, evict, cite, jail any one of those people for doing what everybody has to do at night. And you get unions like the SEIU, which is too gutless to even oppose this basic human rights violation. You get council members like Tony Madrigal, who run on a platform of reexamining the sleeping ban, but then when they're asked about it in a public meeting 9 months later, having ducked the issue successfully in contact after contact, what do they say? They say, it's a sensitive issue with me and I don't want to talk about it. And then when you try to talk about it further, they shut off all communications, as Madrigal did with the Human Rights Organization once we played on the air his public discussion or non-discussion of the sleeping ban law and his refusal to take a position on it. So I always kind of go off into these little segues. And while I'm doing this, we have a man over there under a straw hat who may have come up with a song. Have you come up with a song? Or are you still just not sure what to play?
I'm not sure. I'm thinking. You know, I could keep thinking.
Blather on forever. I'll tell you, I've got a whole stream of things to say, and probably not enough time to say it. I did go to court on Wednesday. It was my arraignment, my actually final formal arraignment on the charges of disrupting a public meeting and resisting arrest, which the district attorney alleges I did on June 14th. And I mentioned this earlier in the show, trying to talk for 2 minutes on a labor issue at city council. The real issue, of course, was the mayor's new city council rule that makes it illegal to talk or a violation of his city council process for more than 5 minutes on any and all items on the consent agenda put together. So if you want to talk about an item on the consent agenda, you have to make sure that you haven't talked about previous items for more than 5 minutes. And to be able to do this, of course, requires being able to anticipate what you're going to want to talk about, what other people are going to say. And it's unfair, it's unrealistic, and I think, as I said, it violates the Open Meetings Act, certainly in spirit, if not in letter. And that's going to be one of my defenses in court. My second defense is going to be that excessive force was used, because I was told I had to leave the chambers. I said, well, you have to. If you arrest me, you declare I'm under arrest, I'll leave the chambers and I'll leave with you under arrest. The police officer, Lieutenant Clark, did not do that. Instead, he brutally grabbed me by the hand, wrenched my hand behind my back, and put me in a position where I was screaming, as the phrase goes, like a girl. And when finally an officer said, you're under arrest, I said, I'll go with you, and I went. But I kept saying, what are the charges? Am I under arrest? And getting no answer. And my second defense is going to be that the officer used excessive force, and so the entire arrest was illegitimate, whatever the underlying charge may have been. It's interesting that the city council is choosing to pursue this. I also chose, as they say, not to waive time, which means I chose to demand a speedy jury trial within 45 days. I'm lucky to have an attorney who's volunteered to defend me, a guy from out of town, David Beauvais. I may have actually interviewed him on the air before, but not recently. He's a sort of a low-key fellow. He's very concerned with civil rights for people who are, some of us who are unpopular in some quarters. Certainly with city council officials, city officials, I should say, and members of the city council. The trial is going to be in late September, unless they think better of it and drop the charges, which I keep hoping they're going to do, but I actually am less and less hopeful about that now because they've kind of put themselves on record. Lieutenant Clark, I was able to see his police report, and I think I will be posting it online shortly as the most interesting example of, it's not really totally creative fiction, it's a very long police report. Clark at one point joked that he had erased, that there was nothing on the audio tape which he had seized from me. I usually, when I go to city council, I carry a tape recorder with me to record what goes on so that I can later play selections on free radio. And the tape recorded the fact that I was asking him if I was under arrest, and he was saying nothing. Instead, using physical force against me. I would call it brutality because, as I said, my left thumb is still numb in the center, and it's there's sensation is gone there and hasn't returned. I don't know if it ever will return. So I suffered an injury as a consequence of that, which was completely unnecessary. Of course, Rotkin, who did the citizen's arrest, that's Mayor Rotkin, also needn't have done what he did. He simply needed to provide 2 minutes to a member of the public to speak and wouldn't do it. We'll see where that goes. There's going to be a pretrial, I think it's September 3rd, and I'll keep you folks out there advised for those of you who want to check it out. I'm hoping to get the tapes. I guess I was saying before that one of the things that Lieutenant Clark said, is aside from a string of threats that he made to me after he had me in handcuffs, he went on at length denouncing me for naming him in a prior lawsuit. In the police report, this gets twisted around to say that I brought the issue up, which, of course, I didn't, and I couldn't have because I didn't even know he was named in the lawsuit. I learned that later from my attorney, and that was a prior situation where he hadn't been brutal. He'd just been involved in a lawsuit where the city council again tried to restrict access of the public. In this case, it was a homeless demonstration in January of 2004 at city council under Mayor Kennedy, and Kennedy arrested me for whispering to a homeless man that he was wanted outside to speak to the media. And when I came back in and sat down and said, I feel I have a right to be here, and I'm not going to disrupt your meeting, but I'm not going to leave. It's a public meeting. He had the meeting recessed, had me arrested. And Lieutenant Clark was a part of that whole deal, but he wasn't violent. I have no complaints about Lieutenant Clark's behavior, except that he was following an illegal order and violating the Brown Act and violating my civil rights. Now, whether he's culpable or not, the federal court and the federal jury will decide. That case goes to civil trial in February of 2006. So we'll see what happens with that. But Clark apparently was infuriated that I had done this, and again, that his name had been appended to this, to a lawsuit. And as I said, it was done really without my knowledge, because this is a pattern and practice of city council's behavior towards me, and it had actually taken place 3 or 4 years before. Some of you old timers may remember when I was arrested for a silent gesture from the side of the room, a mock Nazi salute, after the then mayor had a member of the public threaten that they would arrest her, in essence, if she didn't leave the microphone. She was a peace activist, even though her time was not up. And I just sort of briefly lifted my arm in a kind of a Heil Krohn. Krohn is the name of the mayor. Kind of a, Sieg Heil. Didn't say anything. I just lifted my arm. Anyway, that went nowhere. That was none of those disrupting a city council speeches or charges, I should say. And so this is a practice used by the city council repeatedly when its policies are challenged. It doesn't want to talk about homeless issues. It doesn't want to talk about civil rights issues. It doesn't really want to talk about a lot of other major issues. You can see, for example, in the party at your peril debate, the debate about the unruly parties law that passed this summer, conveniently wedged into the summer without any kind of meaningful interaction with the student population that it is targeting up there near the campus. The city council didn't want to have a meaningful dialogue on that issue. And it's really their standard approach, and how they, particularly Rotkin, who's, when he has an agenda, when he wants to proceed with his agenda, whether it's the Coast Santa Cruz Hotel or the party at your peril ordinance, whatever it is, the downtown ordinances. Or, you know, and the sun, and sometimes Rodkin does some good things. It doesn't happen often, but it happened with the medical marijuana permitting of Lisa Molyneux's Greenway Clinic, which, by the way, should be opening at the end of August. I got a kind of a confirmation of that from Lisa when I talked to her earlier today, and she's going to be on the air on Sunday. She's going to come into the studio and chat with us about the Greenway Medical Marijuana Club, first one in Santa Cruz in 5 years. Again, unfortunately, due to Rodkin and his refusal to countenance any kind of reform of the Rodkin Medical Marijuana Zoning Restriction Law, which he had passed in 2000. Now, so while I want to give him credit for letting one club open up, he still is not looking into the promised reform of that law, which he committed himself to a year and a half ago in November of 2003. And so we have a situation where one person gets to open a club, but everybody else, you know, I mean, I'm actually hopeful that Lisa, who is going to be opening this club, is really going to be quite an inclusive person. But we should have reasonable laws. This is the city that, one of the first cities in California, one of the first counties to declare, I think it was the second after San Francisco, maybe in the United States, to declare that medical marijuana was something that we were going to permit. And the city authorities for many years permitted a club to be at Maple Street in the now forbidden downtown area, which Rodkin's law now forbids. So there's stuff that needs to be done, stuff that needs to be talked about at city council. And in order for that discussion to take place, you can't have people under threat of arrest. And there's got to be real access to the city council. And that is something that I continue to, in my own small way, fight for. And that's one of the reasons, I guess, I'm going to trial and facing a year and a half in jail. That's the maximum. Presumably, if I'm convicted and sentenced, it'll be less. But since I have a tendency not to take probation, because I don't believe that activists can really effectively take probation. If you take probation, then the first time a police officer has contact with you, you're at risk, without a jury trial, without a finding of beyond a reasonable doubt, of simply being taken to jail for the remainder of your sentence and held there by a judge making a decision by a preponderance of the evidence that you are guilty of some kind of violation. So I may be, you know, in the lockup if this goes on. And if I'm found guilty by a jury of these two charges, I don't think I am guilty of these two charges, and I'm hoping that that's not going to happen. There will some that say that's not the wisest thing to do to talk about this on the air before your trial, and I can appreciate that. I do, however, believe that since this is a public issue, the real issue has to do with access to city council, the failure of city council to take any kind of meaningful action on homeless civil rights issues or homeless shelter issues or issues of police misconduct, or issues of abuse of renters. I mean, one of the things about this party at your peril law, this unruly party law, unreasonable noise, unreasonable party law, is that it allows landlords, in fact, it almost makes it necessary for landlords, to put a huge extra amount of money as a requirement for rental, because these may be fines that they may be charged if in a police officer's discretion there's an unruly party going on there. And it's a lot of crap. And I'm going to be talking about that more on Sunday, hopefully with some actual footage from the city council meeting. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Steve, Robert.
Hello.
Robert, do you have a court date, or you're going to let us know down the road?
I think the next court date is September 3rd for pretrial, probably 10 o'clock in Department 1. But I will let you know down the road to confirm that.
Okay.
And I'll also post it on Indie Media.
The picture you painted in my mind's eye is just like disgusting. I have a picture of a big old brutish masochist, you know, tweaking your arm and putting you in pain for some sick, twisted thing in his mind. And for a city council like Santa Cruz to allow that to go on in their room is just absolutely appalling. But, you know, it makes sense when you're in Gestapo world in AmeriCode. You know, it makes sense. Even they allow that kind of sick shit. you know, it happens to poor people all the time throughout the nation, from one unshining city to the other unshining city. But, you know, it goes unpunished. But just to allow that, and especially like in Santa Cruz. Anyway, I hope you wish their luck. And like you said, you shouldn't probably be talking much about it. So anyway, I'll be there with you.
Sure.
Bye.
No, I'm glad to talk about it. I appreciate your calling in.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. So, yeah, I'll keep babbling about it because it's on my mind and I'm thinking a lot about it. If anybody witnessed this incident, please come forward and give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. It was the June 14th City Council meeting in the afternoon. And I'm also eager to hear if anybody has had any untoward incidents with Lieutenant Steve Clark. He is also featured, by the way, in the last issue of Street Spirit. In the same issue where there's a description of what went down at the City Council on June 14th around this arrest, written by my producer, Becky Johnson, and my she's a Huff activist who's been with me for years, fighting on the same front. But there's also a sidebar about the kind of activity Lieutenant Clark has done in the past, and I kind of hope that Clark had kind of graduated from this behavior. Verbal threats. He actually threatened. He said he would, if he had to take me out of City Council again, he would hurt me. Meaning he was very upset that I essentially did not leave until I heard the words, "You're under arrest." I was in essence saying, "I want you to put me under arrest before I leave this council. The minute you say I'm under arrest, I'll go with you. Until then, I don't believe I'm surrendering any of my rights in this situation." So I said this so frequently on the air that it doesn't take any great amount of research for the DA to find this, and I don't make any secret of it. So there it is. And again, if you want to read my broader perspective on this issue around the Brown Act, you can go to the Sentinel website, or actually Indie Media also has an interesting article by Thomas Levitt on this issue. Thomas writes about the Brown Act, too, and how the City Council has repeatedly violated certain mayors particularly. And I've talked about it, of course, on the air over the years, and I'll be talking about it again. Let's see here. Camp Casey. You know, before we get to Camp Casey, I'm going to try to get the update on the Metro strike, because the United Transportation Union is holding a strike vote today. And I actually heard an earlier prediction that there's a likely strike in the offing, and I want to hear what the update is on that from Bonnie Moore, if she's at that number. Let's see if we can get her on the phone. So we're ringing away here.
UTU Local 23.
Hey, Bonnie Moore, you're on free radio with Robert here.
Hey, Robert. We haven't counted yet. We've got more people voting.
Oh, boy. Well, tell us, I'm going to be out of here before you finish your vote. I hope you give a call to Free Radio, whoever's programming, and tell them, you know, what's gone down when you find out.
Okay, let me write the number down here again.
Sure. The phone number is
427-3772. Okay, 3772.
And if folks want to get that information, what number can they call you at to find out later if that's acceptable?
Well, they can call this number here, which is 429-6707.
429-6707. That's the United Transportation Union?
Right. That's our office phone. I don't know how long we're going to be here after that, but I'm kind of tired. And
how many people are voting here?
We have about 143 is the total active workers.
And how many ballots have come in?
Let me see. How many ballots are we at now? What? 130. And we do have some folks that are on vacation and out of this area, so we're up to 130 now.
Now, are you actually counting the ballots now?
Are we counting yet? It's not 8 o'clock. They won't let us count.
Right, you are. Well, that's appropriate.
Yeah.
Darn.
I know.
Well, you know, we talked to you on the air on Sunday, and you were, or maybe it was on Thursday, maybe it was both. I think it was both Sunday and Thursday, and you were going into special extended negotiations, and we read in the paper that the negotiators came up with some sort of a deal with the SEIU, which is the other union involved in the concerns about, essentially it's health benefits, right?
Yes.
What was the outcome with your own negotiations with the Was it a city negotiator or a state negotiator? What was the?
Well, there was a state mediator that came down. And what they do is they basically facilitate some of the negotiation process. They don't really suggest or do the negotiating. They just kind of facilitate the process. Otherwise, it's still the same group of people negotiating, the district's negotiating team and the union's negotiating team. And we sit in separate rooms at this point, and the mediator kind of runs from room to room, and he tries his best to get us to come to some type of agreement. But there was just nothing there for us to be able to agree about.
Now, when we spoke earlier, you said, you told me that the actual, there was some question whether these negotiators had anything that they could negotiate on, because you told me you presented them with a possible, $500,000 package.
Yes.
For the union was willing to give up $500,000 in some form.
In savings out of the contract, that's correct.
And how were they willing to give it up? In what way?
It was all, you know, different benefit packages that we have. It was a form of overtime that we have. It was, we were, our members were willing to give up our total bilingual pay. We were willing to get, we have a list, and there's this other process that's coming down on the state side, which mandates lunch periods and rest periods for transit workers. We were willing to work with the district on a waiver for that so that they didn't, it wouldn't cost them any additional money to implement this negotiated meal and rest break period. They're interested in the waiver. They're not interested in crediting us anything, even though the transit district put a cost on that for 3 years of $1.2 million. We told them, let's work through that and use some of the savings from that and apply it towards our medical. They basically said, well, you know, nothing has value to us. So, this is what we want.
So what amount, what percentage of that $500,000 was from the this benefit figure that you put on the
on the contract, you mean?
On the lunch and rest period waiver.
On the, they gave us a figure of $1.2 million over 3 years. That makes it $400,000 a year.
So most of that $500,000 you're talking about came from that?
No. We chopped that down, and we went through savings. We had about $255,000 in savings. We said, give us about $200,000 of savings off of that IWC waiver, and then let's take care of the medical. The medical was only $387,000. So that was more than what was necessary to fix the medical.
What additionally were you giving up in addition to this $250,000?
We had about $100,000 in savings off of this overtime process that's just too difficult to explain. And $80,000 in bilingual pay. We have a drop a day. The district put a cost on that for $48,000.
You had a what? I'm sorry.
It's called drop a day. It's where you only work 4 days a week. And
drop a day. Okay.
Yeah, you subsidize your own benefits. Your
now,
own.
Is there any way that, because none of these facts are clear, if they are facts, and I'm assuming they are, are in any way laid out by Sentinel readers or even readers of the Mid-County Post, which has done some more extensive writing on this issue.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen them on the Indy Media website. Is there any chance, you know, because the public, I think, needs to know both, you know, the pro and the cons here.
Yeah, well, you know,
and they're going to need
really
to know.
It's hard for us to get info out in the media.
Indy Media will allow you to publish, unless, of course, you're Becky Johnson, but that's another story. you know, it, so I would say put your, why not get, you know, an articulate bus driver person or sympathizer to post this specific offer you made on Indy Media, because if you're going to be on strike, you are appealing to the public to support you, and there's going to be a lot of hostility and concern, because a lot of people need to use buses to get around, right?
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. And that's a really good point. We've just found it so hard. I'm so busy. It has been so hard to get information out. We try it through the newspapers. We try it, you know. We've been trying everywhere we go. Unfortunately, I'm not web literate, so I haven't even been able to update my own website because our website person has been away for a while. And so it's just been somewhat difficult.
I've been moderating. I've been getting emails from Paul Marcelin Sampson, who you know, we've talked about him. He's a Metro Writers Union former and also a, you know, he's an advocate of public transport.
Mm-hmm.
And his view, as you know, is that unions need to take more of a cut than they're taking. That their wages are increasing faster than the cost of living.
We're not asking for a wage increase. We're asking for the district to compensate our medical benefits. We're not asking for them to add additional money onto wages. We're asking them to take the burden off of us. Listen, in SEIU settlement, they got their medical benefits are still being covered. The longer we wait, the further the wedge is being driven between the two different unions that work at the same company. We work at the same company. Our medical benefits should be the same.
Now, the did you get some other benefit which the SEIU didn't get because you didn't take the medical benefits? Did you have bad negotiators when this deal was struck with the SEIU?
I don't know
what happened?
I'm allowed to say anything.
You're not allowed to say.
No. I said I don't know if I'm allowed.
Oh, okay.
We had negotiators maybe that were more self-consumed than.
It's not that I'm trying to, you know, impugn the negotiators. I'm just wondering, you got some other quid pro quo, did you not, or did you just get a worse deal than the SEIU?
When the medical cap was placed, which was 6 years ago, it was done by an individual who thought that it was more important to protect the single payer. The only difference that ended up happening, because most of the people in this area are on the HMO, because they can't afford the more expensive programs. We have probably about 5 people who took the more expensive programs, and therefore their insurance was compensated to the tune of $600. So for 5 people who got compensated to $600, rather than have that single payer's amount capped at the cost of the HMO for a single person,
which would have
been $381.
And you have about 155 people in your union there, more or less? Or?
Yeah, we have about 155, and the majority of them are all on the HMO.
And so the HMO, in essence, is not being paid for. So those who are fortunate enough to do the single payer...
Right.
Got it. I'm not entirely clear on all that either.
Well, it was 5 people that received a higher benefit.
Let me ask you this.
It wasn't some big win-win here.
Talking with Bonnie Moore of the United Transportation Union, you earlier told me that you suspected that there was likely to be a strike. Is that and you know you're not sneaking peeks at the ballots or anything, but that was your sort of offhand estimation or?
Yeah, we're having a hard time getting folks to hear us. I mean, the public hears us and. You know, and that's. I'm sorry. I don't know how to, have them understand that we're not doing this because we want to impact the public.
Well, it is going to impact the public.
Yes,
when do you think it's going to come down?
We're gonna nurse this thing as long as we can because we want to go back to the tables, but we want the company to negotiate with us fairly. We want this public agency to step up and fix our medical. We have been begging them for 3 years.
So is there
3 years ago it wouldn't have cost them as much to fix the medical?
What's the timeline here? I mean, when will you go on strike if you do go on strike? When will your hand be forced?
Well, I don't know because it's going to depend on what happens at the next board meeting, which will be on the 26th, a week from tomorrow.
So it won't be until then.
It won't. No, because we don't know what the district is going to do. I mean, we still have.
What would prompt you to strike at that August 26th board meeting?
Well, depending on what the rules are that they start to impose on us in the process here. I mean, we don't know. We haven't received our bid work yet. We haven't received anything, so we don't even know what we're looking at. So it depends on how horrific this comes at us when they go to impose. Because we don't know what we're looking at.
Well,
we have no clue.
Well, then what I guess we can do is we can talk to you about this more as the scene
goes.
Gets clearer.
Yeah.
And, again, I encourage you to... to find someone to do some posting. It's easy for me to say, but I mean, there's got to be somebody in the.
Sure we have some folks that can post some stuff for us.
I mean, surely there's some union officials who get paid to work on this kind of thing.
That kind of process. We self-represent.
Oh, okay.
We're all just bus drivers.
So you're not getting paid a chunk for manning the phones and doing the election.
No.
This is a volunteer job.
No, you crazy woman.
Yeah.
I don't. No, I'm not getting paid for this. I'm just getting tired.
Just don't fall asleep after 11 o'clock. That's all I can tell you. You might be arrested under the sleeping ban. Okay.
Oh no, I know that one.
Yeah, I know. I remember you were working on that with the Green Party back in 2002.
Yeah, I'd like to keep being able to work on that one.
Well, Bonnie, thank you. I'm going to roll. And if people want
more
information,
Robert.
Should they call you, or should they? Is it what should anything they
They're
should do?
They're welcome to call here. If we're not here, there is a referral number that'll send you to my other office that I have.
And again,
another
the phone number of
429-6707.
429-6707. Thanks, Bonnie.
Thanks, Robert.
All
bye.
Right. Bye-bye. And that's Bonnie Moore. I want to thank the long-suffering, patient-looking, and well-modulated voiced man who is in the studio with me. Any final guitar chords you wish to twang us with?
Sure.
Have a caller here. We're going to take that call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with a better musician than me. Hello? Going once? Are you there? I think you like the music better than the call. Let me just ask you again. You're going to be down Pacific Avenue, New Leaf Market, and thereabouts. You got this CD that you're pushing. We don't allow commercial advertisements on Free Radio, so just watch your step. I, however, like this CD. I like your playing, and you're out there on the street. You're a street musician, as far as I'm concerned. So they can pick it up from you if they want, right?
That's true, and the website is up, but you can get it from there too. But I've sold on the street. I've been selling them in towns on the street for almost 3 months now, and I've been actually in Santa Cruz for almost a month. So I've spent a third of the time on the road here. Because it's going so well here, and I've been doing pretty well selling CDs on the street.
When's your end this Iraqi war single going to come out?
Yeah,
I see you're doing some composing in the studio, making notes.
Yeah, I was writing a little. It was more focused toward the way that they have everybody on the move downtown more than a global.
Oh wow, are you going to play us a song around that one, or?
Maybe not just yet.
Next time. We got a caller coming in here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Eli.
Hey, Robert.
Hey.
And Eli.
Hey,
great
Steve.
Music.
I recognize you traitorous dog, you.
What's that?
I said I recognize your voice.
Okay.
Welcome. You have about a minute and a half before the sounds of the 60s wafts us out of here.
Okay. Yeah, I get confused. I hear the radio and I hear like what happened a minute
turn
ago.
Down your radio. That's always something you got to do.
I just wanted to comment on this the situation with the drivers' union and the
sure. Let me just say goodbye to Eli and hello to Uncle Dennis.
Hello.
Hello. Goodbye, Eli.
Thanks
again for coming in. Man. Go ahead.
Okay. I think to me this guy Paul Sampson.
Marshall and Sampson.
Yeah. I'm embarrassed as a bus rider. I'm embarrassed and offended to have someone like him to pretend to be speaking for me and my interests. I mean, a true riders' union would unite with the workers and fight for better funding and for better services. And I saw that in Minneapolis when the drivers went out on strike there. I was in Mexico City supporting bus drivers on strike there, where riders and drivers were united and recognizing that a big part of the problem.
You know, Steve, what I'd like to do is get you actually on the air, perhaps debating with Paul Marcel and Samson. I think we'll be happy to do that. I'm out of time. I got 10 seconds left. And I'm about to be brutalized by one of the most renowned thugs of Free Radio Santa Cruz. So let me get you at another time.
Okay.
Much thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Here's a little more Ann Feeney before I go. I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30, and I'll be back next week with Jim Gottstein, who's an Alaska psychiatrist and lawyer. At least he's a lawyer, and he's going after the psychiatrist for involuntary commitment and forced drugging. So join me then, and check me out at 423-4833 if you've got some interesting stuff you want on the air. Thanks again for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Oh, the snow was softly falling on the little Polish town, and the winds of late December, they were blowing. The clouds were all the color of the finest wedding gown, but it wasn't from the clouds that it was snowing. As we count the number of their names, may we come to see their ashes as the flowers of the flames. May our knowledge be the measure of our darkest memory. May our mercy be the measure of our knowing. They have killed another poet, sang the skies to Bolivar. Now the heart of every hero will be aching. But the silence only deepened in the bones of his guitar. With the sound of every finger they were praying. And the song goes on forever if it's true. While tyrants rot like roses in the damp and bloody dew, till our words become the anthem of a never-ending love. And our music sets the measure of its making. I saw the Queen of Heaven through the doorway of a dream down the streets of Sarajevo. She was sweeping with a flower for the children, terrified to scream, and the mothers all too weary to be weeping. And if the hands of innocence at prayer can rinse the smell of gun smoke from the flowers in her hair, may she us to the promise of a final pledge of peace. May our honor be the measure of its keeping.
Mm-hmm. the crossroads, believe I'm sinking down.
I know you deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and if you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play, and never see you when deliberately you put things in my way, well, here's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too, you're gonna lose that smile, because all the while, I could see for miles and miles, I could see for miles and miles. For miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. You took advantage of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while, I can see for miles and miles, I can see for miles and miles, I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. A surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. Eiffel Tower and the Taj Mahal, might see on clear days. You thought that I would need a crystal ball to see right through the haze. Well, here's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too, you're gonna lose that smile, because all the while, I can see for miles and miles, I can see for miles and miles, I could see for miles and 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 miles. I could see for miles and miles. I could see for miles and miles. I could see for miles.
A song Dickie Betts wrote from our second album, in memory of Elizabeth Reed.